Right, then let's call the regular session March 8th Water Utility Commission to order. Ms. Tanner, a roll call, please.
Commissioner Hitt?
Here.
Commissioner Hollingsworth? Vice Chair Merritt?
Here.
Commissioner McMillan?
Here.
Commissioner Milkey?
Here.
Commissioner Reynolds?
Here.
Chair Hurt?
Here.
Thank you.
All right. At this point, call to audience. We'll open that. And my understanding is we have no one waiting to speak, correct, Danielle?
That is correct.
All right. We'll close the call to audience and we'll begin the regular session agenda. Item one, review and approval of the February 8th regular session meeting minutes. You've received those minutes in the packet. Are there any additions, changes, or corrections to those minutes? All right, hearing nothing, I would entertain a motion to approve.
So move.
All right, second?
I'll second.
All right, Member Milkey moves and Member Merrick seconds. All those in, whoops, we can't do a voiceover anymore. Rasp. Ms. Tanner, a roll call vote.
Commissioner Hitz?
Approved, yes.
Vice Chair Merritt?
Yes.
Commissioner McMillan?
Yes.
Commissioner Milkey?
Yes.
Commissioner Reynolds?
Yes.
Chair Hurt?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, the minutes stand approved. Item two, update discussion and importantly, possible action on water utility annual reports. Mr. Abraham.
Thank you, Chair Hurt. So, last month, the water utility staff put together a draft of our 2021 annual report, and we sent it out to the commission for review and to make recommendations on the report we put together. And as you know, this report details the activities of the commission and the utility for the past year. And we got some good comments back, and we always appreciate the comments we get back from our commission. I think every year this report gets better and better. You know, just today I was looking at the 2000 annual report, 21 years ago. And I mean, it was an inch thick and it was a tough read. So, I mean, we've obviously come a long way. I think literally every sentence in this report has value to it. And it's, I think it's getting better and better. And that's because of the expert review we get from our commission. So thank you. We brought the report up and I have a Word document of it up. If there's any changes that the commission is seeing that didn't make it into the report that they feel strongly should have, or if since the final review, there's additional comments, we're prepared to make those changes in real time. So with that, I'll open up the floor to the commission for any comments on the annual report.
All right, commissioners, any comments and particularly any changes that you might want to see?
The only question I had was, since the report covers the period of a good part of the period in 2020, I wondered if people who had served on the commission in 2020 might also be recognized somewhere.
So that would be Commissioner Tustison?
I think that's all. But you know, if we just made it a standing of the report, it would just be an easy thing to do every year.
How about this? What if we just make an acknowledgement that, something along the lines that Winston had termed out, but he did serve on the commission in 2020? How about something like that?
Yeah, sure. It takes about one line.
Okay. Yeah, we can do that. And yeah, that's fine.
Good suggestion. Thank you.
Yeah, Danielle, can you just make a note of that? And I'll find the words to put it in the document just to acknowledge his service in 2020.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Before I comment on that, Winston served this board a very, very long time. I think all things being equal, he deserves more than a sentence. You know, he had to have, 15, 20 years worth of time on this commission. And I think that deserves a little bit of extra recognition.
Do the other commissioners agree with that? I'm happy to say, we could state, a longstanding commissioner, Winston Tustison, and talk about, when he began serving and when he ended, and thank him for that service.
Yeah, I that's what I'm kind of thinking. That's exactly the line I was thinking, Peter. Thank you.
Yeah, it might be nice to recognize his whole term of service.
Yeah.
Okay.
Peter, I think I would also add in a piece. I know this sentence is getting longer by the minute, but I would also add in a piece. Winston did a lot of very good work with the finance subcommittee, particularly in this last year, and adding in and chaired finance subcommittee.
Okay.
That may not be meaningful to other people, but I think it is meaningful to those of us that know what Winston put into the job.
Yeah.
On the bottom line, my point really was that also that since this report covers activities in 2020, and any commissioner who served in 2020 was a key part of those, I think we ought to make it a standing practice that if a commissioner has gone off the commission for any reason, they're recognized in the report that as long as they served during the period covered by that report.
Okay.
All right, noted.
Okay. Anybody else? Well, let me know, Peter. I think this is even when I read it, it was a clean and clear report. And congratulations to you and staff for putting together an excellent report.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, and I'll pass that along to staff. It's, for sure, it's a team effort. The senior management team and Danielle work hard to, Danielle works hard to make everybody's different writing styles sound like one writing style. So thank you for that. And if the commission, if they trust that I'll put the right words together to acknowledge Winston's service, when we're done with our statements and comments, the staff will be asking the commission to recommend that staff render this report to council.
Are you asking that today or at this meeting, Peter, or are you?
Yeah. I mean, it depends on what the additional comments are. If there's a lot of work to be done on this document, we'll do that work and send it out to the commission for a final review. But if it's, simple things like, adding some acknowledgement to Commissioner Tustison's service, we could do that today.
Okay. There's one.
But we're still in discussion, but I just wanted to mention that.
No problem. Other comments or other issues with the annual report? Hearing nothing, we can take possible action on this item. Therefore, as long as we are willing, and I certainly am, to believe that Peter can make the changes that have been noted in this meeting, I would be certainly willing to entertain a motion to approve.
I move we approve the annual report for April 2021 for the Water Commission to be forwarded to council.
All right, is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
All right, is there further discussion? Ms. Tanner, I think it's time to do the vote thing.
Commissioner Hitt?
Yes.
Vice Chair Merrick?
Yes.
Commissioner McMillan?
Yes.
Commissioner Mielke?
Yes.
Commissioner Reynolds?
Yes.
Chair Hurd?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Congratulations, Peter, on putting together, again, on putting together a very good annual report. And the commission sends it to you for transmittal to council.
Thank you, commissioners. And again, thank you for your review and very valuable commentary to the annual report. So thank you for your support. And we will make that minor modification and we'll render this report to council.
Very good. All right, let's move on to item number 3, update and discussion on annual assessment of well field condition and groundwater metrics. Mr. Abraham.
So thank you very much. So every year, the water utility performs an assessment of our well field. And when we say well field, it's not just the aquifer. It's also, you know, how are our pumps doing? How are our wells doing? As well as assessing, you know, how our aquifer is doing. This body of work is also part of an Arizona Department of Water Resources report that we put together for ADWR every March 31st of every year. So every year we report to the state, you know, the static water levels in our monitoring wells and our wells to give the state an idea of, you know, how our aquifer is doing. So it's become something that we reported to the commission. It's important information and very valuable information. Next slide, please. So looking at this slide here, you know, we're showing the Oro Valley limits of the town of Oro Valley, which are in red. And then in the light tan represents our service area. You'll see there's some areas that aren't tan. Those are areas that are served by other water service providers. Like, for example, in the south there, that little rectangular piece in the south, that's served by Tucson Water, right? Yeah, right down in there. And then on the west side or the southwest side, those areas are served by either Tucson Water or Metro Water. And what's happened is, you know, as the town has annexed into areas that were, you know, previously served, you know, we didn't, you know, we left the, we didn't, you know, we didn't do a hostile takeover of the water system there. So there are portions of our town that are served by Tucson Water and Metro Water. You know, most of our wells, the real, what we call the sweet spot of our aquifer, kind of follows the CDO wash. Christian, can you kind of show the alignment of the CDO wash right there? Right. You know, that's where the low point of the town, that's where all the sand and gravel is. A lot of the thick alluvial deposits that's, you know, has, you know, a real thick, the aquifer is real thick there, you know, a lot of water there. So most of our wells are located in that area there. We have, in our main service area, we have 16 active production wells. And then in our countryside service area, we have 2 production wells. And then we also have monitoring wells. Next slide, please. So I just want to show, you know, explain to the commission and also show to the commission the kind of data we collect, as well as the calculations we make that help us assess how our well field is doing and how our aquifer is doing. So this is just for one of our wells. And, you know, we have the year, and every year we look at the pumping capacity, how many gallons per minute are we getting from the well? And then we calculate, you know, depending on what our flow meter says, you know, how our annual volume that was pumped. We measure our static water level every year. And then we measure our pumping water level. And the static water level is with the well off, we run a probe down a level sensing tube, and we get the elevation or the depth to groundwater. And we compare that to the previous year. And then with the pump running, we measure what the pumping water level is. So, you know, when the pump turns on, you'll get a cone of depression and the pumping water level is always lower than the static water level because of that cone of depression. And we measure the discharge pressure. And we also measure the drawdown, which is the difference between the static water level minus the pumping water level. And then we get a real important number. We call that our specific capacity. So if you take your pumping capacity and you divide it by your drawdown, you get the gallons per foot of drawdown. And this information tells us a lot of things. It tells us not only how the aquifer is doing, but how's our well doing? You know, if you see your pumping capacity go down, you might think, well, there's something wrong with a pump. Not necessarily. If your well screen starts to get plugged, your pumping water level goes down. That increases your discharge head, which reduces your pumping capacity if you look how a pump curve works. So we collect a lot of information. We analyze it every year, and it gives us a lot of information. And one of the very important pieces of information is the static water level. You know, before we started with, you know, reclaim deliveries and CAP deliveries, I mean, literally every well was seeing double digit static drawdowns or declines every year. Next slide, please. Just showing in graphical form how we look at this data, and then I'll revisit the aquifer portion. So here, looking to below the data analysis for well CS1, we look at the year, the static water level, the pumping water level, and the discharge pressure. And if you look at the data here, yeah, you'll see the red line, that the static water level in general has gone down every year. And the green line below it is the pumping water level. And it, in a healthy well, it typically mirrors below the static water level line. You'll notice you can almost perceive a little divergence between the red line and the green line. And what that's an indication of, that your well screen is starting to plug up and you're losing some specific capacity. This one's not bad, but if it really starts to diverge, then you start looking at some things, and you probably might need to go into the well and pull the pump and rehabilitate the well to open up that screen again. And when you do, you'll usually restore that green line to mirror the red line. And then the blue line just represents discharge pressure. In this case, this well pumps into a reservoir. So any change in discharge pressure is really just due to whatever the elevation is in that reservoir at the time you took the reading. But when we pump into the system, if you see the discharge pressure really change, which we've seen before, you start looking there. Maybe, you know, a contractor doing some work might have started closing a valve they shouldn't have closed, and someone stopped them and they didn't open the valve back up. We've seen those kinds of things happen before. But that's why we monitor all these things, constantly looking at our system. The graph below, we're comparing pumping capacity to specific capacity. And the reason I picked CS1 is, you know, you can see the pumping capacity, the green line it went from 900 GPM down to like 840 GPM. And then the blue line was just kind of following that. But then it's diverging a little bit, but then we rehabilitated the well. We pulled the pump, we video logged the well, we brushed, you know, baled, cleaned up the screen. This well had a hole in it. We patched the hole, and we re-equipped it with a new pump. And when we did that, we got our capacity back, and our specific capacity came back. So what you'll see is, over time, you'll see things declined and you rehabilitate it and it goes back up and then it, you know, starts declining again. And that's very normal. So this is some of the data we collect, and it helps us assess how our wells and how our pumps are doing in our wells, as well as tells us something about the aquifer. Now, talking about the aquifer specifically, next slide, please. So, you know, data collection and analysis of the groundwater metrics. So here again, this slide is looking at all of our wells in our Oro Valley service area and our Countryside service area. So in Oro Valley, we have the 16 wells, as I mentioned previously, and in Countryside, we have two wells. You know, if you look at, and Christian, can you, so what I really look at here, well, they're all columns are important, but, you know, you can see there's a difference in a pumping difference. So Christian, can you go to the 1920? Yeah, that column right there. So in 2020, we had a hotter, drier year than the previous 2 years. So you'll see for each well, in general, we pumped more water. Now, for wells D8, E7B, you know, we, let's see here. Well, we rehabilitated those wells. D8 required quite a bit of work in its rehabilitation. And that's why you see it pumped so much less than last year. And that's because we had it out of service for several months. And so it didn't have a chance to pump as much, but also the benefit of that is its static water level didn't drop as much. In fact, because we pumped it for a few months less, the static water level came up 3.7 feet, which is detailed in orange. So overall, 2020 wasn't a good year for my perspective for our aquifer. You know, the previous 2 years, we had seen recovery in nearly half our wells, but this year we only saw recovery in three wells. And you can see in the second column from the right is the 1 year change. Christian, can you go there yet? Yeah, right there. You know, C4, the static water level dropped 1.1 feet, you know, C5, 2 feet, so on and so forth. You know, the real concerning ones to me are like C8, that minus 9 feet. I've asked staff to go out and remeasure that just because it just seems so excessive, as well as D7. But these are all the things we look at. And, you know, I attribute this mostly due to just the, you know, not getting as good of a hydrology as we'd gotten in the previous 2 years. So we had made some good ground in the previous 2 years, but we lost some in 2020. So, you know, looking forward on the good note, and I had always stated that regardless of, you know, how much reclaimed and how much CAP water we deliver to our service area, we need to have the groundwater pumping capacity to cover everything. You know, contractors accidentally hit transmission mains, you know, those sorts of things. So on the good note, you know, our pumping capacity of our well field exceeds our delivery demands. Three wells showed aquifer recovery, but that's three less than what we had last year. Last year, we had six wells showing recovery. One of the things we're beginning to do, or we're continuing to do, is every time we rehabilitate a well, we put additional instrumentation in the well. We put instrumentation such that we can get real-time pumping water level or static water level data. And one of the things we're beginning to do is, you know, just look at what we want to get to is look at, you know, what's the static water level doing? What's the pumping water level doing? Are we pumping a well too hard? Having all of our wells equipped with this instrumentation, which will probably be another 3 to 4 years before everything has the instrumentation we want, I think it's going to help us manage our well field so we you know, distribute, you know, how hard we pump our aquifer. you know, in 2024, we're slated to have the capacity to deliver another 4,000 acre feet of CAP water. And that's going to really have the biggest effect of all is bringing in this additional supply to offset growth and to offset, you know, if we're looking at a higher, hotter, drier future in perpetuity, those additional supplies offset that. So, you know, unless we just have excellent hydrology in the near future, I don't expect us to have some real awesome positive news until we start delivering those additional supplies. Next slide, please. Well, there we go. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions or love to hear the commission's commentary and feedback.
All right, questions or comments to Peter?
I have a couple of questions. One is, how often historically, Peter, do we do the well measurements that you just discussed?
We do it quarterly, but the one we report is the, you know, we take readings in January of every year, and that's the ones that we report to ADWR. it's just what they require of us, but we take readings quarterly. We are working towards doing it monthly. And what I'd like is once we have the instrumentation in place, you know, I told my water operations group, I said, I want to come in and have one of my monitors. I want it to look like the stock market. I want to see real-time data every day, because then we can make operational decisions that really, I think, will help us manage our pumping of our well field. But right now, quarterly, we're required to report just one time annually, but I want to move to monthly and then move to daily. If I wanted to know the data.
Second question is, two of those well fields that showed recovery, they both pretty much pumped the same amount of water. I was just wondering why you felt like they had a recovery.
Christian, could you go to that slide, please? It's the second from the last, I believe. Okay. Commissioner McMillan, could you state your question again? Make sure I understood it.
E2 and I think the E, which one right below that, showed recovery, but they pretty much had the same pumping. Why do you think they recovered?
Well, just looking at the static water level change, you know, they didn't move in the negative direction. They moved in a positive direction.
Mm-hmm. But you had the same amount of pumping between 19 and 2020. So I was wondering why they recovered rather than went down. Is that just you found the perfect pumping spot for those wells?
No, I mean, you know, here again, there's other folks that pump from the aquifer. I mean, it depends on, I'll tell you what, as I'm learning the nuances of our aquifer, some areas, like if you have a real, real wet year, some areas of our aquifer recharge really quickly. Other areas recharge slowly. You know, it's kind of, the aquifer has its own unique characteristics. I guess I don't really have a good reason for you. At this time.
That makes sense.
But it is, there are some wells, like every time it rains, literally within a week, we see recovery. Other areas, it's not for 3 or 4 months. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Other comments or questions for Peter?
Question. Peter, in the example, the pump example you showed, it sort of declined, and then about in a 20-year time frame, that's when you rehabbed it and went back up to the, I think, 900 gallons per minute. Yeah, that one. Is that 20-year window typical for the system, or does it fluctuate?
So, unfortunately, that time frame was typical. My direction to staff is, it's based on my experience. You need to rehabilitate a well about every 10 years. 20 years is going too long. You know, and I hope I'm answering your question correctly.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, in our utility history, 20 years or, well, let me put it to you this way. Our operating mode used to be reactive, and that was run it until it breaks. The direction provided to staff under my direction is we're proactive, is, you know, we monitor capacity. We monitor specific capacity. We look at all these things because a pump will tell you, a well will tell you when it's struggling. You look at the data. So, but at most, under our current operation, it's even if it's everything's going fine, every 10 years, we're going to be going in there. Did that answer your question, Commissioner Hitt?
Oh, yeah, that does. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. All right. Other questions for Peter or comments? Peter, I think you've done it.
Thank you, Commissioners. Yeah, you know, when I was looking at the data, the news was so good the last 2 years, but this year I felt like we just took a step back. But I think it's due to the worsened hydrology, and we pumped well because it was hotter, drier. We got less rain and we pumped more. But I hope for better news next year.
So do we all. All right, let's move to item number 4, discussion on supplemental Northwest Recharge Recovery and Delivery System intergovernmental agreement to expand the existing partnership. Mr. Abraham.
Thank you. Commissioners, I apologize if it seems like it's the Peter Abraham show today. Mm-hmm. These are just things that I happen to be taking the lead on. Next slide, please. So first, to discuss the original Northwest Recharge Recovery Delivery System, IGA, the foundation of it was in April of 2017, the governing bodies of Metro Water, the town of Moran and Oral Valley, we unanimously approved a 50-year IGA. That IGA provided a capacity entitlement for the partners. Oral Valley's capacity entitlement is 4,000 acre-feet a year. And the IGA detailed the partnership design, construction, operation, and maintenance of the NWRRDS. And the IGA detailed the extent of the partnership with specific delineations between where the partnership work and the ended and the independent work began. And bear in mind, you know, this was now, you know, we're coming up on 4 years ago. And now that we've been working with the project and the partners have been working together, we've identified additional areas for where we can realize cost savings for all the partners. And I'm working on a supplemental IGA to the original IGA to take advantage of that. Next slide, please. So just real quick, and I know that most of the commissioners have seen this 100 times. Christian, if you could show the partnership IGA is the green line, where if you could show, yeah, right there, we have our recovery wells and the transmission main, and it goes to the east to the partnered four bay reservoir and booster station. It's there is one of the delineation points from the partnership to each independent entities part of the project. Next slide, please, Christian. So here, looking at that partnered reservoir and booster station, the partnership ended after the reservoir, right before each of the booster stations. And Christian, if you could identify that point of entry there where it says valve begins, individual party responsibility, go down right there. So the original IGA, the partnership ends at that valve, and each independent entity builds their own booster station and pipeline. And Christian, could you go to the next slide, please? So Christian, if you could identify the booster station there, it's the shaded area right there. So there's Oro Valley's booster station, and to the down and to the left is the part you can barely see. Go down and to the left, you could barely see. Yeah, right there. And next to it would be where the partners booster stations are. And then we have three independent transmission lines heading to the east. When we first put the IGA together, we didn't know all the things we know now. And we thought our transmission mains would be going in different directions. We thought the booster station arrangement might be a little different. But as we've gone through this process and have been working with, property owners and rights of way, we realized that there was really only one way in and one way out to this property. And it was, it ended up being a condemnation situation that the partners didn't want to go through three separate times. So what we did is we just got as big of an easement as we would need to have three transmission mains. Well, here comes the logistics part is, if you have three independent entities building their own booster station and transmission main, and they're on top of each other, it's very possible we could have three different contractors doing this work, and we're going to want to be doing it about the same time. It's a recipe for disaster. And we had our consultants start putting the numbers together, and we said, what if we were able to partner on the booster station construction and a portion of the transmission main to Twin Peaks, and we make Twin Peaks be the delineation point, because at Twin Peaks is really where we kind of all go, really need to go our separate way. So next slide, please. So what we're working on right now is a supplemental NWRRDS IGA. And Oro Valley, this was something we brought to the partnership, is we saw a need or a real opportunity to take advantage of the economies of scale and really uncomplicate the job. So, Oro Valley would become the lead agency, and we would be responsible for the procurement, the project management, construction inspection, billing, and project acceptance. The partners would reimburse Oro Valley for their fair share of all of those things, the basically a third of the procurement costs. Now, the construction costs would depend on their booster station, because not all the booster stations are the same. So we can put a bid schedule together such that everybody would know what their construction costs are, as well as reimbursing the town for our project management costs, our construction inspection costs. We're writing into the IGA where we'd be reimbursed for the effort it took for us to put the billing together for the partners to reimburse us, as well as the administrative support for the project. We estimate, roughly about a $250,000 savings to each of the partners. Next slide, please. So the timeframes and steps, the IGA needs to be completed this fiscal year. Like I said, Oro Valley's taking the lead on it. I'm going to the partners with a almost final draft this Thursday. The IGA it'll commission recommendation for approval to council, and it'll require council approval. And the supplemental IGA needs to be executed by all parties by, September, October of 2021. So we're on track to meet those goals or those timeframes. So what are the next steps? Supplemental IGA completion by Oro Valley staff, review and acceptance by the partners, and review and acceptance by the partners' procurement and legal staff. Review, acceptance, and approval by the partners' governing bodies, and finally, the execution of the IGA. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. This will be something that we'll dive a little deeper into with the Water Resources and Conservation Subcommittee. But then we'll have at least one update and then one final meeting to recommend approval to council. So the commission body as a whole see this very likely in more detail two more times. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions or comments to Peter?
I have two.
Bob?
First question, can this create any cash flow problems for us?
So great question, Commissioner Mielke. So, you know, in the IGA, I've written in very fast turnaround times and reimbursement from the partners, and it models the IGA we have now. Like right now, Metro Water invoices us, and we're required to turn this around. We're in less than a week's time, such that right now, Metro Water, they receive the funds before they pay the contractor. And I'm modeling it the same as that we would be in receipt of those funds before we paid the invoice.
Okay. Second question is, are there any liability issues for us?
Well, you know, and that comes about in the terms of the IGA, where we, you know, try to minimize that. And here again, you know, we have, and that's where we'll dive deeper into that language, and it'll be reviewed by procurement and legal to minimize that risk. But yeah, I mean, if it's a poorly written IGA, for sure, there's a risk for that.
Well, go ahead.
I have a question. I want to make sure I understand this. And is each entity still going to have its own booster station and its own pipeline, and we're just going to manage it all three of those projects as one?
That's correct. Unfortunately, each of the partners is pumping, you know, to their respective service areas. You know, in Oral Valley, their elevation is basically right there at Twin Peaks. Metro Water has a little higher elevation, and then Oral Valley's, you know, even higher yet. So it's a different pressure class of pipe. So that's just the pipe. And then the booster stations, you know, they're different horsepower, different pump designs, you know, the layout of the booster stations, just by looking at it, they'll look very similar. But for example, Oral Valley, our horsepowers will be, you know, higher horsepower motors than Metro Waters. Metro Waters will be higher than Marana's. But unfortunately, yeah, it needs to be three separate booster stations and three separate pipelines. And plus, we're all gonna, you know, we're not necessarily going to operate this system identically. We each need to have flexibility on how we operate this system to meet the needs of our unique service areas.
Now, what I was thinking was a single booster, and we split it up at Twin Peaks. You can put in a single station and single pipeline to there would be a lot more savings than $250K per entity, but a lot of complications when you get to those different pressure zones and such. So.
Yeah,
Marana answers your question.
Marana's pumping here, Metro's pumping here, and Oral Valley's pumping here. It's it doesn't work. Great question.
Thank you.
Other questions or comments?
Quick question. How is this going to impact the overall time frame of the project?
Well, it should keep us on schedule. Putting together these IGAs, it's a lot of work. It takes a lot of time. And we looked at every angle we could think of to, you know, how can we not have to have, how can we each do this on our own, but stay out of each other's hair? We can't. It killed the schedule. I mean, someone was going to literally have to be last, you know, and it takes this kind of work. I mean, it could be 9 months to a year, you know, so, you know, everyone was like, okay, fine, keep it the way it is, but we get to build our stuff first, you know, because we don't want to have, you know, a $20 million asset that we're not using. You know, we all want to use it soon. So coming up with a supplemental IGA seemed like the best solution set, or the only solution set. We looked at procurement methodologies, you know, so how could we all independently have the same contractor? And we worked with our procurement staff, and unless you just got completely lucky and got the same contractor, that this was the best solution set. We felt. But to answer your question, it keeps us on schedule.
Thanks.
Okay, other questions or comments? All right, Peter, thank you very much.
Thank you, commissioners. And this is just a heads up on, you know, what we're working on and what's coming down the line. Thank you.
All right, thank you. We now move to item number 5, town council meetings and communications. Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you, Chair Hurt, and thank you to the entire commission. Just have a few things to share with you. You may have heard these before, but I think it's important. You know, as a new council comes in, one of the things we do in February is we have our council retreat, and that's where we begin the preparation of the next strategic plan for 2 years. You know, we all know we have a general plan, but there's also strategic plans, which are 2-year segments of the 10-year general plan. So that was something that we did this month. A couple of other things you may or may not be aware of. There's been a lot of discussion about the Push Ridge Golf Course. Both of our council meetings in February had some activity there. And we finally did get around to, and I think this is a good thing, we got around to hearing the Parks and Recreation Master Plan. It's been very difficult due to other items that we needed to deal with first. But we did get to hear that, and you know, we did get to see the big potential plans that could be taking place over the next 10 years. So those are the three main items that I'd like to share: strategic plan, Push Ridge, and Parks and Recreation Plan. And thank you very much for the time, Chair Hurt, and back to you.
Thank you, Councilmember Bowen. All right, item number 6. Subcommittee Commissioner Reports, Finance Subcommittee.
The Finance Subcommittee hasn't had any meetings since our last commission meeting.
No problem, thank you. Rick, I think Water Resources and Conservation Subcommittee.
We have not met as yet. We do have a meeting scheduled. I believe it is for April 8th. We just got that set up today and confirmed. So I'm sure we'll be discussing that IGA with Peter, and looking forward to it.
Very good. Thank you. All right. With some fear and trepidation, director's report. Guess who's on tap? Mr. Abraham. Peter, you need to unmute.
You're probably enjoying the mute. So here's the last you'll have to hear of me for tonight. Next slide, please. So, you know, not a lot of activity going on lately. So upcoming meetings, you know, March 17th, that's next week. We have a town council regular session Zoom meeting at 6 p.m. April 7th, again, town council slated for town council regular session meeting. And then April 12th, we're slated for our next Water Utility Commission meeting. I'm working on getting a speaker lined up for us to be announced. So to hopefully give you a break of having to listen to me report to you. So I'm working to come up hopefully with a good guest speaker for you. Next slide, please. Okay, water news. Well, you remember how much fun I had with this the last 2 years? I mean, I think I showed you this every month because what was it in 2019, we were this yellow line here. That was great. You know, 2020, we had the blue line. That was another great year. And this represents the snowpack in the upper basin states, which directly correlates to runoff in the Colorado River and, you know, eventually ends up in Lake Powell and Lake Mead. Well, here I am in 2021, and we're tracking our dismal 2018, like, almost perfectly. You know, unless we get just, you know, and it can happen. I think in, it isn't shown on this graph here. It was 2016, I think. We had a dismal start, and then they called it Miracle May, where the upper basin states just got slammed, and it really took us over the curve. So that's always possible, but we're on track for a less than average year of snowpack, and that's not good news for Lake Mead. We are expecting to be in the CAP Tier 1 shortage that I've been talking about, which reduces deliveries to agriculture, but doesn't affect deliveries to higher priority users like municipalities, but it will affect the delivery cost for municipalities. So we still get our allocation, but it'll cost a little more money. If this blue line tracks that green light, that'll pretty much seal the deal that we will be in a Tier 1 shortage in 2022-23. Next slide, please. And here you're just looking at a plan view of the upper Colorado headwaters. We had enjoyed 2 years of, you know, light blue and dark blue, which is, you know, means you're at over 100% of normal. Right now we're tracking, you know, 70 to, you know, oh, what, 80 to, yeah, 78 to 97% of normal. So we're below the curve, definitely. So keep our fingers crossed that we get a miracle April and May. So this was much less fun to report than in years past, but I guess every once in a while you're going to get these years. So let's hope for the best for the remainder of the snow season for those upper basin states. With that concludes my report. Next slide. Thank you.
All right, questions for Peter or comments? No questions, no comments. All right, Peter, thank you very much. We now move to call to audience. I'm assuming that we have no one in the queue. Open the call and close the call. Future agenda items. Does anyone have any future agenda items that they would like to? I think Bob has his hand up.
Yeah, I have. There have been two major issues of security in water systems recently. One in Texas, related to a winter weather event, and the other in Florida, related to hacking. I know the former should be easy to address in an open meeting, the question of how we would react to a severe weather event. The second, I understand, is a little tricky to talk about what kind of security one has against hacking, but to the extent we could, I think I'd like to hear about both these subjects at some point.
From my perspective, excellent suggestions. Peter, can you work on that one?
Yes, so Danielle, did you get a security of water systems with respect to inclement weather and our preparation of that, or, you know, maybe not just weather, but acts of nature. And then second was maybe like IT or IT security of our system or hacking of the water system. Did I understand that correctly, Commissioner Mielke?
You did. And I'd be happy to, on the second item, I realized there are certain sensitivities about that. So I'd be happy to talk to you offline about
you know, what kind of things might be presented. It's a little tricky in an open meeting to talk about IT security.
Yeah, yeah. Let me talk with staff about that and IT. I mean, obviously we do have several lines of defense on that, but I'm sure we can find the words.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Do we have a second?
I beg your pardon?
Do we have a second?
We can do it that way. Do we have a second that we move all right, I see Rick put his hand up the second. So Member Reynolds, seconds. And let's see, as far as a future agenda item, does everyone understand the question, first of all? Okay, we don't need that repeated. All right, Ms. Tanner, a roll call vote, please.
No vote required, Mr. Chair.
All right, very good. All right, any other future agenda items? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Member McMillan moves.
Second.
Second.
Member Hitt seconds. Thank you. All right. Ms. Tanner.
Commissioner Hitt?
Yes.
Vice Chair Merritt?
Yes.
Commissioner McMillan?
Yes.
Commissioner Mielke?
Yes.
Commissioner Reynolds?
Yes.
Chair Hurt?
Yes. And we are now adjourned. Thank all of you for your participation, and take care and have a good evening.
Thank you. Good night.
You too.
Thank you as well.
Take care, everybody.